Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Brad Pilon. And we were on a, as the day we're recording this, we were on a workshop, a conference call sort of workshop with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and they were covering guidelines for, it was a workshop for dietetics and nutritionists, and they were covering guidelines for food labeling, infant formulas, supplements, just a bunch of different things, and it was just they were giving information to stakeholders, basically meaning people that sell products, consumers, educators, physicians, anybody who could get continuing education credits in that field. Basically, they were just giving an up-to-date guidelines on what's going on with the regulations. And a couple of interesting things hit us, and this is what we're going to be talking about today. The concept of healthy eating or eating healthy, and then the word health itself and how it is controlled to some degree or at least regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. So the word health, healthy, eating healthy, and the other and another word healthful, all of those things are to some degree controlled and regulated by the FDA. And when I say controlled or regulated, it has to do with how it's used on packaging, how it's used on labels, how it ends up in marketing campaigns, and how it can and can't be said by marketers and companies that are selling foods and supplements. So I guess me and Brad were, I was taken back when I just realized, it hit me all at once that that word itself and the concept of healthy eating actually has a sort of an invisible regulator neither of us thought about. And the government has, there's like case law about it and everything.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder, right? Why one word? Like, why would you govern a word like that? And a lot of it comes from the history behind food. And a lot of what happens with health and nutrition is obviously food-based somewhere along the lines. So in the USA, prior to 1970 and 1980, there was no cleans on your foods. Believe it or not, there wasn't even nutrition info. You didn't. You picked up a coffee crisp or a Snickers bar. You had no idea how many calories were in it. It was just wrapped up and you ate it.
You mean like on the wrapper? There was no info on it.
Yeah, man. Wasn't even any nutrition info, which I find astounding because you think if we added that in general in North America about 1980, you know, knowing how many calories we're eating supposedly because those numbers are always kind of off, but hasn't helped a whole bunch. Right? It didn't really stop the obesity crisis in any way. It just gave us more stuff to worry about. But regardless, so it was around 1980 where all of a sudden we started to allow claims. Health claims on our food. See, prior to that, if you put a health claim on a food, food became a drug, right? So just the two weren't related, right? You kept them apart. But the food industry knew that claims, health claims, would sell more products. So they pushed and pushed and pushed, and finally the government sort of said, okay. Always interesting when you think about it, it wasn't a giant population of people saying, we want health claims on our food. It was a small group of people wanting to sell to a bigger group of people and put it together. But so health claims started appearing, right? And then this is why it has to be governed, because it's a marketing tool, and in a fair trade and fair economy and fair everything, it had to be even keel. So in order to regulate the use of health claims and health marketing, the word health had to be properly defined.
Right, and if me and Brad had competing companies, like if you and I had competing companies and I had – you know, we sold basically the same stuff, but I just said all of my items were healthier than yours.
Yeah.
And you had no way of saying otherwise.
You're wrong. Yeah.
You'd win. Yeah. Right. Yeah. People will buy mine. Even if you kind of didn't really believe me, wouldn't you just hedge your bet? Or wouldn't you just like be like, well, you know, that one said it's healthier, so maybe I'll, you know, maybe I'll buy that one.
Well, there's actual clinical research to show that just by having a health claim on the product, it makes you assume that the rest of the product is healthy as well. So, yeah.
Even you know how Subway does their nutrition info and it advertises their, like, the few items they have that have, like, a few grams less of fat? That there's been research to show that those locations sell more items. And it doesn't matter what it is. People aren't even buying the one or two subs that actually have low fat. They're buying whatever in there. Just being that in that atmosphere, people think everything in Subway is healthier than everything, you know, in McDonald's or somewhere else.
Exactly. And another example would be organic, right? I mean, not knocking organic food, but the simple fact is a lot of people buy food because it's organic, but if you were to ask them, couldn't properly describe what it means to be organic, right? You just know that it sounds healthy. It's a health claim. Therefore, the food's good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So then it, this sort of all sort of came together for us on this teleseminar we're on, especially when we realized that, you know, health has always been the word health, something that bugged both of us, right, because it's so vague. And I don't know if people know this, but the definition of healthy eating is eating in a way that maintains health. Like, that's a great definition.
Yeah, if anyone defines a word using the same word, like, you got to question what, like, come on, you can't do that.
You're not helping. Yeah. So it turns out that health, and specifically healthy eating, as a claim on a product, according to the FDA, would mean it would have to be low total fat, low saturated fat, low cholesterol, low sodium, while maintaining the at least 10% of your daily needs of, I think it's calcium, protein, and vitamin A, and maybe one or two other vitamins. It's a very defined food group, right? And then, you know, got you and I both thinking, we're like, how can you define health that closely? I mean, everybody's working out and eating, you know, complicating their lives as much as possible to be healthy. And really, no one can give a really good answer to what healthy is. A great example is because I think most people would argue what I just said by saying, well, no, healthy is like absence of disease, right? Like,
well, yeah, but you can't say that because lots of people live long lives managing a chronic disease.
Exactly. Or not only that, a lot of chronic diseases may or may not be related to what you ate, right? Or even if you exercise. I mean, you could be the best, well, you could be Lance Armstrong, right? An accomplished athlete who succumbed to cancer. You probably can't tell him it's because of what he ate or his sedentary lifestyle, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it can't just be prevention of disease, right? So then why else are we doing it? Defining health becomes very difficult. And if the term health becomes vague or changes quickly, it becomes really hard to market to it. Right, because you, as a marketing department for a major food company, you can't have a moving target when you're about to do a run of 500,000 labels for your new product. Right, you just did your plates for those labels. I mean, you're looking at a massive spend to launch this product, and all of a sudden, the definition of health changes or what's healthy. You can't have that, right? Now, if you're a small company, you're all for it because you're going to try to, you know, out niche market one of the bigger companies. But if you're a bigger company who has some sort of pull with the government, you don't want change. And that's what I found interesting is despite this whole, you know, obesity crisis going on, the definition of what is health, what is healthy eating, what is healthful hasn't really changed too much.
Oh, yeah. It's the same old stuff. And I like that point about the concept of it not being flexible because as the scientific community slowly uncovers more and more stuff about food and how different foods, you know, interact and, you know, whatever, calorie levels, saturated fat, sodium, all that sort of stuff. Some of the things you just said about being healthy or not, the low fat, the sodium percentage and all those things, it could change. It, like, scientifically, like, how it actually matters to people could, like, from a scientific standpoint, could actually totally change. Right. But the legal definition of the word won't be changing anytime soon because, mm-hmm. like you said, large companies that are selling foods with those claims can't afford to have the whole thing change all at once.
Oh, totally. I read somewhere that what we believe to be scientific fact and what we believe to be governing policy only really changes through attrition, right? So as people, like, literally scientists die off and a new group of scientists come up and challenge previous beliefs. So it's almost these massive generational gaps, and same with government, right? If you have a group of people in government, and by and large, they know each other or they're friends with the groups of generations that are tight to each other, not too much is going to change. It takes large, large jumps before, you know, you're going to see a noticeable difference. It's really true in science, despite what people might think, is that once you kind of become the top of your field, you're the person referenced the most, right? So if John Barbin is the leading research in healthy and he says healthy is this, that's not going to change until you're retired and someone else is really, really going after what you said.
Oh yeah, well that a friend of ours just sent us an article today pointing out that controversy over researchers blocking researchers that are editors of a particular journal blocking other people's research from being published. So,
oh, I haven't read that. What was that about?
It was basically.
And oh, before you start, my apologies to Tyson. I do read your emails. Just didn't get to that one.
It was basically the idea that particular certain researchers in any given field who are the editors of the journals where all that research for that field gets published are in control they're in control of which other pieces of research can or can't get published in that field. And same with the reviewers. So I don't know if you so the peer review process, basically, if me and Brad do an experiment and we've got it all done and we want to publish this piece of research, it has to get sent out for anonymous review by other experts in the same field, and they tell us where there's gaps in what we've done or where there's like places that it needs to be fixed up. And then we either make modifications, and in some cases they ask you to do like more research, or they'll hold you up somehow. And so these people were, this article was about a group of researchers in the field of stem cells, but it happens in everything, where they were pointing out that they were being held up unduly, like, because the reviewers that are reviewing their research, who are also experts in their field, maybe their research is in direct conflict with the results of the reviewers' research, and they would rather have their stuff published, and so they hold these other people's papers off. And the end result is the more you publish, the more grant money you get. So there is a money trail there, and there is a big reason why I would want my research published before yours. Okay. And if we're competing over the same grant money, like the same – and some of these grants get huge. Like in stem cells, the grants are massive.
Oh, obviously, yes.
So if it's the difference between you getting a $2 million grant or me, I'm going to make it almost impossible for you to get published. So yeah. – And we know personally people who this has happened to, so this isn't – we're not making this up. And the article doesn't surprise me in the least because everybody I know in every field has run into maybe not something this overt, but has experienced some kind of bias in the review process. And it's not blind at all. People totally know who's doing their review.
No, I don't think it would surprise anybody to hear that there's bureaucracy in science, because what they have to realize is that – science is an industry.
Well, yeah, and at the top, and bureaucracy is the right word, because they're fighting over grant money that's being handed down by a government.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it sort of all comes down to the paper trail. And, you know, a little bit of ego and bias, right, in terms of information coming in that might, contradict you and your rightful place on the top of the food chart, food chain, so to speak, for science. You know, a lot of people probably don't know. Well, most people who are into science probably know that the different journals are rated, right? So a journal will have a different impact factor in its field. So it lets you know which journals are the premium journals, which ones are not so premium. What I think a lot of people don't know is that actually the authors are also rated. You actually have an author impact rating as well. And I think that comes into play a lot of these things, is you're protecting your author ratings, and the journals themselves are trying to protect their impact rating, which means higher impact authors and their journals. So it does very much become a high school popularity contest in a very, very rude way of thinking of it.
Yeah, so instead of accepting a piece of research because it's groundbreaking, good research, they'll accept the one that has the catchy headline, or the one that will be quoted more, because the amount of times that a piece of research gets cited is part of what its impact factor. So it's... So the editor, it's no different than a newspaper editor who's just looking for catchy headlines with no substance.
No, exactly.
And I'm not saying that happens everywhere. I'm just saying it's very easy to see how that can start happening when that eventually controls the flow of money towards one group versus another group.
So I think that's the way we finally fit this one together, right? Is to point out that health in itself is a marketing tool. And that the exploration of health via science is an industry, right, with its own bureaucracy and its own set of rules. The actual use of the word health, or the concept of health, even in North America, is largely governed to a much larger degree than I think anybody realizes, right? And then the actual term itself is outside of these factors, is actually still extremely vague in terms of what health actually means.
Oh, yeah, totally. Nobody can actually come up with a definition of health that makes that. I mean, it's got to be a personal definition. There's no way that.
Yeah, I was about to ask. Would you consider like health to be an individual definition, something you define on your own?
It has. I think so. It has to be. I mean, there's general things, but this all comes down to someone else telling you how to live your life and telling you what healthy should mean to you, and what, like, does it mean life extension at all costs? Like, like, would you consider yourself a not healthy person if you didn't live to, you know, 110 years old or right. something like that? So it, like, it's, that's up to you to decide where that line, or is it quality of years? Like, you'll be happy if you live to 80, but if you can have as much fun as you can between that, like, I don't know, what is it? Like, if it's the absence of disease, well, that's not very fair to people who live with congenital disease, like, you know, somebody who's born with diabetes but lives, you know, a long, satisfying life. You know, are they healthy or not? I mean, they have a disease, but they have insulin to deal with it, so they're okay.
Exactly.
It's
too vague. You can't describe it as purely longevity, because you take that all the way to its sort of, you know, most outrageous argument, and you think of the cartoon Futurama, where they have, you know, it's thousands of years in the future, but they have the present still alive as heads in a bottle. They're still alive. They're just a head in a bottle. That's longevity, but
it's not
ceiling, right? Like, so you can take it that far. The typical argument even against eating for longevity or eating for long life is, great, you're adding 5 years of life at the end when you're drooling in a wheelchair. Not a pretty thought, but it's kind of the argument against it. So it would have to be. It would have to be an individual definition. I mean, I'm pretty sure that a cancer survivor or cancer with cancer would describe maybe health as simply remission. It would be great, right? So I think everybody would have such a distinct definition. And I find also that the it's largely used, and I think it's because of the fact it's so powerful in food and nutrition marketing, that when we say the word health, it's often just simply, you know, you have some sort of vague concept of, again, no diseases, not being overweight. But from an entire different field, which is the study of mental health, right, there, I mean, the people whose professions lie in that area would describe health completely differently.
Well, I think for the average person, health, for people who don't research in this field and don't think a lot about it, health just represents the opposite of death. So, like, if you were just going to go straight to your extremes, so yes. If you were, like, really healthy, that's about as far away from dead as you can get.
Right.
But the thing is, we're all going to die, and that, like, really sucks. And so people are afraid of that, too. So the idea of clinging on to anything that seems healthy, that's why it's the most powerful word in the world, is, like, if you can make something, it's healthy for you, I mean, how do you resist that? Like, it's like you're saying, no, I'd rather be closer to death than not to death. So, I mean, of course you're going to move towards anything that talks about health, and I think that's why that word is being regulated. And also, I think and specifically with healthy eating and healthy nutrition, whatever, I guess is what our topic, you know, what we're going to talk about anyways. Yeah. It's the idea of actually being able to actively partake in something that becomes healthier for you. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, you know, I think this is where the anti-medical establishment, like, alternative medicine stuff comes from, because, you know, when you have a physician...
The vagueness of the word health, basically?
Well, yeah, well, here, this is where I'm getting at. So, I mean why it's regulated and why it's such a powerful, gotcha. Powerful claim. So think about this. If my hypothesis is right, that people basically view health as this idea that's the opposite of death, and that, you know, none of us actually want to die, and then if you can actively partake in doing something that's better for your, quote, health, meaning moving you away from death, or moving death further away, why wouldn't you do something about that? And because of the way our medical systems are set up, health has been sort of outsourced, right? Like, you have a physician that does the health stuff. Like when you're really sick, or like when you break something, or, you know, you're doubled over in pain from appendicitis or something, where, you know, oh my, like, I cannot fix this with, you know, with some chamomile tea. Like, something's bad. Like, something hurts and it's got to be fixed, like, right now. You have to outsource that. Like, believe it or not, your health is completely dependent on everyone else around you and not necessarily you. There's not much you can do for it that isn't already sort of woven into the fabric of society with the way our, you know, medical systems work and sort of everything around you. So I guess that's a disempowering feeling. So when you have, when you can say, well, but if you eat this, that's healthy, and you can take some of your health back into your own hands. Mm-hmm. I think that's why it's such a powerful claim. And I think that's why the FDA feels like it needs to regulate it, because they're like, think of how powerful of a claim that is.
Yeah, sure. Interesting though, when you did that sort of talk there, you just sort of went back to generalizing health in terms of like a hospital is where you go to get healthy, right? So you went right back to using the health term just in terms of like not disease, not hurting. So there might be just an implication there of no pain could be another aspect of health, whether it's mental or physical, right?
Yeah, it's a sliding scale, right? Like and you know what? The mental health, I think people actually qualify it mental. I think when you, I mean, at least for me, when I hear the word health, my immediate assumption is physical pain. Like, is it, does it look bad? Is something like broken? Is something like, does it feel bad and not like emotionally bad, but does it actually hurt? Or is it visibly like something's wrong? Like there's a cut or something. But mental health, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one who thinks this way, but I feel like that people always disclaim that. Do you automatically think mental health, emotional health when you think health?
No, but it's a bit of a paradigm shift for me lately. I do, just from the amount of people we deal with Eat Stop Eat and the people who email in, at the end of the day, especially people who are trying to lose weight, you just want them to be happy, right? So that's almost when I get to the health, it's like, I just want you to lose weight. Not because I think you're going to look great or anything like that, but almost just because I know, even though I don't even care if you're going to not be diseased, you know, or lowered risk of disease, I just kind of want you to be healthy and let go of this stress you've got. So I'm starting to think that way a lot more when I hear the word health, but when I see it written, very interestingly, I always default to, actually, now I think about it, if I see the word health written, I default to weight loss. I default to weight loss and body shape. When we're
think of that. That word actually to you means written means weight loss marketing, actually.
Yeah. But when someone's talking to me about it or written in an email, so in a conversation, when people start talking, I just want to be healthy. And I sort of interpret that as people saying, like, I just want to be happy and not stressed. I don't even interpret it that way. But when I see it sort of blanketed on a cover of a magazine, I don't even think, you know, the world's most healthy diet. I don't think, oh, wow, no disease. I think like, oh, wow, you can be lean. So that's just – and so I think I've just been trained slightly differently.
Oh, yeah. Well,
how I see it.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, and I'm not trying to say that I don't consider the whole – the emotional part of it and that's kind of the mental part of it as just as important, which it is. I mean, that's what I researched at Florida, right? The whole systems approach to health and the fact that – and that's kind of why I brought up the – your health is dependent on everybody around you just as much as it is you.
Yes.
And just the – you know, the just where you live, the type of life you live – and your emotional reactions to it, people's reactions, all of it, like it's super connected. There's no, you can't ever pin it down to one thing, and that's why it's impossible to define, but why it's such a powerful word at the same time.
Well, do you want to take it out to a massive tangent here? We can talk about just a paper I was reading recently, and not a nutrition paper in any way, but it was actually trying to define relationships. It actually, the point of the paper, as odd as it was debating philosophically whether or not sex, food, and drink were all appetites, right? And the paper started going back and forth, and then originally decided that a relationship has that a two-way, like a street approach to it, right? Is basically to be pleased and to please with a relationship, right? You want to be made happy, and you want to make the other person happy. Whereas sex, is they argued it back and forth, whether that was the actual goal or if it was an appetite. But food or drink were definitely just appetites, right? Like food can make you happy. You can't make food happy back, sort of thing. So it wasn't actually a relationship. It was a food. It was an appetite. So in the people around you, it's because of the relationship, right? Like you are healthy when that relationship is a really good balance of give and take, please and be pleased. If they're not, and you gravitate towards fixing that with food, you end up in this vicious cycle because food, you can't make it happy back, right? So that's why people have such weird relationships with food and they want to be healthy through food, right? But it's not something that can do that for you in such a large grand scheme of things, right? You just can't have a healthy relationship with food. And I've used that term in the past and I kind of wish I hadn't now because it's not a relationship.
Yeah, but that was a huge revelation you and I both had, especially the way you just said it. Like I did, it is an app. Like of course it's an appetite. That's what the hell. That's what food. Like that's what you call an app. Like you have an appetite, right? And you need to satisfy that appetite. So I kind of like the way. I mean, there is no relationship with food. There's just the food, and you eat it. and that's it. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it and stuff, and it doesn't mean it's not present at social events. And, you know, like I did that blog post where I tried to ask people, what do you do socially with in a group of people other than consume food or drink? And no one could come up with anything.
Oh, yeah. So in that sense, food can be a catalyst for a relationship, right? Because food is used to celebrate, right? But on its own, food can't love you back, right? So it's
Food is part of something you do during a relationship, just same as sex. They're both appetites.
Yeah. So on that note then, from, again, defining health from such a giant holistic point of view, it's almost a unhealthy desire to have a relationship with food, which is probably just replacing other relationships. It gets down to exactly what you were talking about, which is everything around you really determines your health from the whole mental physical aspect. And then physical health, because we've been led to believe that so much of disease is nutrition related or lifestyle related, and it's probably lifestyle related, but we don't realize that lifestyle includes your relationships with the people around you, whether it's a high stress life, whether it's people you you're forced to hang out with every day at your job even though you despise them. That probably has an effect on long-term disease, etc. So you are, no matter what, by saying something's a lifestyle disease, you're including everything, including the relationships in your life.
And we've all had emotional reaction to something, to an event, either a person or something that happened. And, you know, for some people, when they get really upset, they eat. For other people, they don't eat. Like, you can't confuse the way your physiological system reacts to stress as that being a relationship you're having with food. It's just the food happens to be a remedy in some cases, or you just stay away from it in other cases. But either way, I'm really starting to resonate with your concept it's not really your concept. It's that we've realized that you don't have relationships with food. You have an appetite for food, and a bunch of different things affect your appetite, but it's not a relationship. And it's almost always related to I don't want to say strength or weakness, but it's related to your other relationship, your actual real relationships with the people.
Yes. Yeah. And the interesting part about food is it could be an addictive relationship because you're always on the receiving end, right? So it's always giving. You never have to give back. But so if we've taken health all the way from a certain style of eating to then, is it disease prevention or not? Is it longevity or not? Now we're talking relationships in your life. When you put that all together, you can't possibly govern that work.
No, you can't. Yeah. Even though we were listening in on a call today where the FDA had very specific numbers for what healthy eating and healthful eating. They even had to backpedal from healthy and say healthful.
Right.
Like they're making it even more vague because they know that the term is meaningless, but at the same time it's so powerful.
Yeah. So, and then the issue becomes if the term healthy eating means eating in a way that promotes health, and we've just sort of, in our own opinion, and because our show and that's what we're allowed to do, decided that health is way more than eating. It has a lot to do with everything, your lifestyle, the relationships you're in. And since eating can't really affect that, can you actually eat healthy?
That's a really – no, I don't think you can. Yeah. I don't think you can use a style of eating like the way that they're trying to do. They're trying to categorize and say that
on the micronutrients, the stuff in the food.
Oh, yeah. So let's say I'm following all their guidelines and I'm following them to a T. But like my relationships are falling apart and I'm like doing really poor work and I've got like – I'm not at peace with myself for whatever reason, and I've got some people that I've done some nasty things to that I've never forgiven. I've got some people who've never forgiven me, and I've got all these. It's just a mess. Like my personal life's a mess, and maybe at work it's spilling over into work, and now I'm starting to get in trouble at work because I've got a lousy attitude at work. Like, do you actually think I'm going to be healthy just because I'm eating a specific nutrient rate? Like, I hope everybody thinks that just sounds ridiculous, because that's ridiculous.
I guess based on our interpretation of health, the only way you could eat in a way that promotes health is instead of thinking of the micronutrients and things in your food, it would be the use of the food. If you're using food for celebration or as a catalyst for relationships with people, etc., so viewing it as a tool that way and just relaxing about it, that's probably the most healthy way to eat, right? It's a way that promotes health in other aspects of your life, as opposed to trying to focus on which micronutrients are going to cause which effects in your physiological system.
Yeah, okay, well, how about this? If you try to follow their guidelines,
Yep.
But by following those guidelines, you somehow alienate some of your better friends, which in turn makes you feel lousy, or you start foregoing social events because it you know, your friends eat at those in a different way, and then you become a bit isolated, but that isolation leads to a feeling of depression. Is following those, is that healthy or not?
No. So, okay, so you know what tonight's revelation is?
What's that?
It is the opinion of Brad Peel and John Parbin and Phi Life that the most healthy food that you could possibly eat is birthday cake. There you go, because it's a celebration, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's food that you typically eaten with people who you actually really, really like. Otherwise, why are you going on their birthday, right? It's a time where typically even the most strict dieter kind of lets themselves have some birthday cake. You kind of let go because it's so strongly associated with celebration and feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
That as long as you don't, you know, abuse that appetite, not that relationship, by eating the whole cake yourself, but that can't happen if you're with a group of people you really like because you have to share it, right? So a slice of birthday cake is the healthiest food we have.
Yeah, and by definition, that means you got invited to somebody's birthday.
Exactly, so you've got friends.
Right, yeah. So that means, yeah, there you go. That's yeah. The healthiest food you can have, a piece of birthday cake.
Absolutely. And it would really just brings it to the point of that is, you know, it's only partially in jest, but the point is that when you see terms like health and you realize that you can't mandate what is healthy, and especially food, it's becoming a bit cliche because a lot of people are thinking about this way, but the more we think about food as its individual components and completely ignore the role it plays in our lives, the less progress we're going to make. So from a Phi Life point of view, it's all related. It all has to do with relationships, and you can't regulate or mandate something as complex as health.
That's no. And then I guess bringing it back to healthy eating and health and the concept of healthy food, not only can you not mandate or regulate the idea of health, but food is so related to our social lives. And whether or not you eat alone, you for sure still also eat with people at some point. And it's always going to be linked to your relationships with other people. You can't tease that out. So I would almost say that your ability to manage how you eat, like let's say if you think you don't eat properly or you think you don't eat healthy, I wouldn't look at the food. I wouldn't look at the ratios. I wouldn't be looking for something that says healthy on the package. I'd be looking back at my relationships and the way I'm kind of living my life. And I'd be like, wait a minute. If that's what's having an effect on the food, it's not the other way around.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I have a good jump for you. It's kind of related, but not really related. You remember in the old office how we had all the nutrition books lined up, right? And it was just like bookcase upon bookcase upon bookcase about diet nutrition book.
Mm.
There was one that got stuck in there, and it wasn't a nutrition book. It was actually a book on networking. It was called Never Eat Alone. And I can remember looking at it going like, huh, that's probably the best piece of diet advice you could give someone, right? Is always, you know, sitting by yourself eating in a dark room because you're embarrassed by what you're eating is probably the opposite of healthy, whereas always enjoying food with other people is probably really good advice, right? So never eat alone could actually be the title of a great diet and nutrition book if you're looking at it from a lifestyle relationships point of view.
Yeah, and even if your goal is not weight loss, but if your goal is just to be have yourself sorted out about how to eat. Like, I remember having lunch with a girl who I had lunch. She didn't eat, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. I'm like, why don't you just have something to eat? And she told me, and this was news to me, but apparently girls do this, she was, I don't, shy, intimidated, awkward. She doesn't eat in front of people. And I was like, what do you, she's like, well, I have to really, really know the person before I eat. So I don't know if, like, she had an eating disorder she wasn't telling me about, or she didn't seem like it, but are you kidding me? Like, we were out at a place that, like, had a really good menu. I'm like, I can't believe you're going to sit there and have a glass of water. I mean, I went ahead and ate.
Did you find it awkward, though?
It was weird sitting. I'm like, you're ruining this for me. Like, you're supposed to eat with me. You can't just sit there and
because
like.
To you, it's a social thing, right? So for you, it was almost insulting to you, right? Because you're like, no, I want you to.
Well, I mean, yeah, it would have been nice. I mean, why the hell would she agree to even go out to have something to eat if she wasn't going to eat? So whatever. I didn't.
You ever had that awkward experience where you put your hand up to shake someone's hand and they don't reciprocate?
They don't put their hand back.
Yeah, like with like that, like that sort of feeling where you're kind of like you're not
totally
really like
it is.
Yeah,
it is super weird, And I'm anyone listening, if you've had this experience, you know, leave us a comment or something. It's weird.
Do it to somebody, see what it's like.
yeah, it's weird. Or do this to somebody. Yeah. It's weird when two people sit down and only one person eats. Like it is. It's odd. Isn't it just food? Like, isn't it just consuming food? But it's so tied to the way we act socially. You can't ever look at food as being healthy or not healthy on its own and not tie it to how your relationship, you know, your relationship with people, not food, but your relationship with people have a big effect on the way you eat. And if that has anything to do with how healthy you are.
All right, so let's wrap this up because I'm going to get going in a minute. So I think we've concluded that you really can't define healthy eating, and if you were to try to, it's eating in a way that's using food to celebrate and socially. One of the most healthy foods that we can come up with would be birthday cake, and in general, you simply can't define a term as large as health and healthy.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess I would say. That when you know, think about when you see the word health written, like Brad said, pay attention to what that makes you think of versus when you hear the word healthy, and then I guess when you see the concept of healthy food or healthy eating, my first thought is if you feel like you need to do something about the way you eat and it needs to be healthier and you need to change it, I wouldn't look at specific food items. I would look first at my relationships with people, everybody in your life. And how you interact with each of them as it relates to food. Like there's some people, like for instance, me and Brad have coffee together a lot. So we're like coffee drinking buddies, but then I have other buddies who are my chicken wing eating buddies, and all of it has to be in some kind of balance. And so you look from your relationships back at how they're affecting your food, not at how your food is affecting out.
Yeah. Yeah. Done.
And I guess that's how it all fits together.
Yeah, we went from an FDA meeting to birthday cake and chicken wings. So I think we've done well tonight.
Yep.
Perfect.
All right. So, for Brad Peel, and I'm John Barbin, and this was your Phi Life podcast.